Roll call for Monday, January 23rd. Agar. Anderson.
Here.
Anselmi Dalton.
Here.
Baldwin.
Here.
Barnard.
Here.
Boner.
Here.
Bouchard.
Here.
Burns.
Here.
Case.
Present.
Christensen.
Here.
Coe.
Here.
Dockstetter.
Here.
Driscoll.
Here.
Ellis.
Here.
Emmerich. Hastert. Hicks.
Here.
Kinski.
Here.
Landon.
Here.
Meyer.
Here.
Moniz.
Here.
Nethercott.
Here.
Pappas.
Here.
Perkins.
Here.
Peterson.
Here.
Rothfuss.
Here.
Scott.
Here.
Von Fladern.
Here.
Wasserberger.
Here.
President Bebout.
Here.
30 present.
Prayer today will be by Father Jason Dickey of the Greek Orthodox Church. Please rise.
Let us pray to the Lord. We thank you, Master and lover of mankind, King of the ages and giver of all good things, for destroying and dividing the wall of enmity and granting peace to those who seek your mercy. We appeal to you to awaken the longing for a peaceful life in all those who are filled with hatred for their neighbors, thinking especially for those in conflict and at war and preparing for war. Grant peace to your servants who gather in your name in the Senate and House. Implant in them fear of you and confirm in them love for one another. Extinguish every dispute and banish all temptations for perpetuating conflict. For you are our peace, and to you we ascribe glory, to the Father and to the Son, and to the Holy Spirit, now and forever, and unto the ages of ages. Amen.
Amen.
May the peace of our Lord Jesus Christ be with you all.
Please join me in the pledge. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Bye, Bob.
Okay, we're at that order of business, reading, correction, approval of the journal. Will the reading clerk please read the journal committee report?
Mr. President, your journal committee reports that the journal of January 20, 2017 has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Bouchard, chairman.
Are there any objections? Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Are you objecting to the Journal Committee report?
As a matter of fact, I am.
Have at her.
Thank you, Mr. President. There was an event that occurred on Friday that we probably need to bring the attention and make a correction in the journal, I believe. This is what had happened. I think in this instance, since it is the journal, Mr. President, I probably need to use a proper name. So with your permission, this is the instance that happened. What we had was Senator Driscoll had previously declared a conflict on this on a particular bill. This particular bill was Senate File 45. He was excused for the vote, but he had not informed the Senate pursuant to Rule 12-2, which is a new rule we just changed a few days ago, Mr. President, that his conflict status had changed since the declaration. If the body would remember, there was a rules committee that went out, and a number of individual members had gone out and talked about the issue was liquor licenses and who wasn't and who hasn't had a conflict. And there was a rules committee that was called, and some of these members came out, and others, certain other individuals decided they had a conflict or didn't have a conflict. And so that hadn't changed. But under our Senate Rule 12-2, if you remember, once you declare a conflict, that conflict stays in effect until if circumstances are changed or other events have happened, you remove yourself from the conflict. So what we had was that Senator Driscoll was excused, so he did not vote for the bill. His conflict status, although was had been put in before as a conflict, And so consequently, a discussion resulted with staff, LSO attorneys, and there's now, at least for this next while, there's going to, because this, we have to do it in the journal, Mr. President. We can't, there's no ability to do it in the electronic system right now because we don't have this capability until it's changed. But there will be a new vote category of excused conflict, and that will be created to reflect the status for future circumstances when we have that same thing. So what I think what we have to do, Mr. Chairman, is I'd move to amend the journal if I understand what I'm supposed to be doing right.
That's correct.
Moving to amend the journal so that Senator Driscoll's vote would be redone as not excused but excused conflict.
Okay, you heard the motion on amending the rules, the journal, or amending the journal committee report. This is open for discussion. Further discussion. You ready for the question? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That motion has adopted. Are there any other objections to the rules committee journal report? Any other objections? Okay, there being none, the report is adopted as amended. Historical event of the day. In 1908, the Powell Post Office was established.
All right, way to go, Powell.
We have no doctor today other than Dr. Emmerich. We have no nurse today other than Senator Baldwin. So we're covered in good shape in that regard. Today is day number 10 of a proposed 37-day session. Senator Kinski.
Chairman, privilege of the floor, please.
You may.
Fellow senators, it's my privilege to introduce to you a guest here in Cheyenne today. Roxy Taft is the business manager of Sheridan County School District. Please give her a Wyoming Senate welcome.
Welcome. Senator Scott.
Mr. President, point of order. My understanding that Senator Baldwin is not a nurse, he's a physician's assistant, and not a veterinarian assistant, but a physician's assistant. And so I would advise the Senate that's a good source of advice if you need medical advice.
Senator Scott, thanks for the correction. I stand corrected, and I will not make that mistake again, Senator, from over the western part of the state. Okay, we have a new page today, and Ethan, if you'd please come up. Ethan Acock is a junior from a spot very special to me, Riverton High School. So please come on up, Jason. Let's welcome him to the Senate. Yeah, Jason, on behalf of the member of the Senate, I want to welcome you here today. It's really good to have you. We have a little pin for you to put on your lapel that we'll give to you. And what I would like to do is, Riverton High School, we have great civics courses up there. We have great math courses. We have actually a pretty good high school. And we'd like to allow you to say a few words, if you'd like, to this austere body of senators.
All I can really say is that I'm honored to be here with all of you, and I can't wait to enjoy these next 2 weeks with you guys. Thanks for bringing me up here.
We'll see if he feels that way after a couple of days.
We could all learn from the young man. That's what I said.
Reports from standing committee. Here. Reports, messages from the House.
From the House of Representatives, January 20, 2017. Message number 134. Mr. President, the following bills passed the House on third reading in an amended form by the votes indicated. House Bill number 33, Non-Resident Motorboats Gasoline Tax Distribution. Ayes 36, noes 23, excused 1. Message number 137. House Bill number 8, Student Data Privacy, Security, and Transparency, Eyes 59, Excused 1. Message number 138, House Bill number 30, State Parks and Sites Fees, Eyes 42, Noes 17, Excused 1. Message number 140, House Bill number 63, Game Animal Licenses Limitations, Eyes 47, Noes 12, Excused 1. The following bills passed the House on third reading by the vote indicated. Message number 132, House Bill 13, Investments of Public Funds, Ayes 58, Noes 1, Excused 1. Message number 133, House Bill number 18, Child Abuse or Neglect in Military Families, Ayes 59, Excused 1. House Bill number 45, Judicial Branch Budget Processes, Ayes 59, Excused 1. House Bill number 59, Higher Education Fiscal Procedure Amendments, Ayes 58, Noes 1, Excused 1. House Bill number 50, Limitations on Delegates, Constitution Amendment Conventions, Ayes 33, Noes 26, Excused 1. Signed, Wendy Harding, House Chief Clerk.
Reports from standing committees.
January 23, 2017, Mr. President, your committee number 1, to whom was referred Senate File 100, Limited Liability Companies, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with the recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Anselmi Dalton, Christensen, Hicks, Kinski, and Nethercott. Senator Christensen, Chairman.
Bills on second reading. Senate File 44, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 44, Speech Pathology and Audiology.
Senate File 44, having read two separate times, the question is, shall the Senate file be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. Senate File 86, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 86, Game and Fish Permits.
Senate File 86, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the Senate file be read a second time? Hearing no objections, Senator Emery, do you wish to object?
Mr. President, if it would be possible to lay Senate File 86 back one day.
Without objection, Senate File 86 is laid back one day. Senate File 88, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 88, Palliative Care.
Senate File 88, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the Senate file be read a third time here? No objection, is so ordered. Senate Joint Resolution 5, second reading of the Joint Resolution.
Senate Joint Resolution 5, Countermand Amendment.
Senate Joint Resolution 5, having read two separate times, the question is, shall the Joint Resolution be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Introduction of Bills. Senate Joint Resolution 7, first reading of the Joint Resolution.
Senate Joint Resolution 7, Depositories for State Funds Constitutional Amendment, sponsored by Senator Meyer.
Senate Joint Resolution 7 will be referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals. Senate File 121, first reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 121, Wyoming Pharmacy Act Amendments, sponsored by Senator Baldwin.
Senate File 121 will refer to Committee Number 7, Corporations. Senate File 120, first reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 120, Mentor Antelope Hunting Voucher, sponsored by Senator Bouchard.
Senate File 120 will refer to Committee Number 6, Travel. Senate File 119, first reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 119, Grand Teton National Park, Transfer of State Lands, sponsored by Senator Coe.
Senate File 119 will refer to Committee Number 5, Agriculture. Senate File 118, first reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 118, Food Freedom Act, Sales Location, sponsored by Senator Dockstader.
Senate File 118 will refer to Committee Number 5, Agriculture. Senator Coe.
Senate File 82, graduation requirements, CPR, was read in yesterday. It does have a minor appropriations. Ask that it be re-referred to Committee Number 2.
Without objection, that referral is it will occur. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, do you have a consent list for third reading?
Third reading consent list, which is as follows. Senate File Number 4, Water Projects Map and Plat Filing Requirements. Senate File 19, Snowplow Lights. Senate File 21, Death Certificates. Senate File 38, Veterans License Plate Stickers, Repeal. And Senate File 64, Accident Report Confidentiality. And not last but not least, Senate File 92, Local Governments Plan Review Authority.
Would anyone like any of these Senate files removed from the consent list? Having been read three separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the Senate? Senate File 4, Water Projects Map and Plat Filing Requirements. Senate File 19, Snowplow Lights. Senate File 21, Death Certificates. Senate File 38, Veteran License Plate Stickers Repeal. Senate File 64, Accident Report Confidentiality. And Senate File 92, Local Governments Plan Review Authority. Will the Chief Clerk please call the roll?
On the consent list, Agar.
Aye.
Anderson.
Aye.
Anselmi Dalton. Baldwin,
aye.
Barnard,
aye.
Boner,
aye.
Bouchard,
aye.
Burns,
aye.
Case,
aye.
Christensen,
aye.
Coe,
aye.
Dockstader,
aye.
Driscoll,
aye.
Ellis,
aye.
Emmerich,
aye.
Hastert,
aye.
Hicks,
aye.
Kinski,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Moniz,
aye.
Nethercott, Pappas,
aye.
Perkins, Peterson,
aye.
Rothfuss,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Von Platern,
aye.
Wasserberger,
aye.
President Bebout.
Aye.
On the consent list, 30 aye. Senate File 4, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 4, 30 aye. Senate File 19, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 19, 30 aye. Senate File 21, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 21, 30 aye. Senate File 38, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 38, 30 aye. Senate File 64, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 64, 30 aye. Senate File 92, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 92, 30I.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 4, Water Projects Map and Plat Filing Requirements, Senate File 19, Snow Plow Lights, Senate File 21, Death Certificates, Senate File 38, Veteran License Plate Stickers Repeal, Senate File 64, Accident Report Confidentiality, and Senate File 92, Local Governments Plan Review Authority, have passed the Senate. Senate File 55. Reading clerk, please read the third reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 55, Anti-Discrimination Military Spouses, an Act Relating to Fair Treatment Employment Practices, sponsored by the Transportation Committee.
We do have an amendment. Would you please read that amendment in?
Senate File 55, Third Reading Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 4.
Senator Boner.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move Third Reading Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 55 and ask for the body's favorable consideration. I want to start off by saying I really appreciate the discussion that we had regarding this particular bill with basically protecting employment rights for our military spouses. And as a part of that discussion, I want to make sure that we're not putting an overly burdensome requirement on our small businesses. So what this amendment would accomplish is exempt this particular protection for employers who have fewer than 15 employees. So I believe this is a very reasonable compromise. As I said before, we do have to strike a balance here. And as somebody who is now in small business and has to go through and know how difficult it is to train up somebody who's new, how expensive it is, both in financially in terms of your time, I certainly appreciate the discussion. But the other side of me is somebody who served 6 years active duty and saw this discrimination being played out amongst my friends, families, and certainly want to also accomplish something for them as well. So I look at this as a good compromise. Certainly, I hope that we can all support the amendment and the idea behind it. So with that, I'll certainly stand for any questions.
Discussion. Ready for the question? We're voting on third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 55. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 55 has passed. Discussion on the bill. Ready for the question? Senate File 55, having read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Agar.
No.
No. Anderson.
No.
No. Anselmi Doughton.
No.
No. Baldwin.
Aye.
Aye. Barnard.
No.
No. Boner.
Aye.
Aye. Bouchard.
No.
Burns?
No.
No. Case?
No.
No. Christensen?
Aye.
Aye. Coe?
No.
No. Dockstetter?
Aye.
Aye. Driscoll?
Aye.
Aye. Ellis?
No.
No. Emmerich?
Aye.
Aye. Hastert?
Aye.
Aye. Hicks?
No.
No. Kinski?
No.
No. Landon?
No.
No. Meyer?
Aye.
Aye. Moniz?
No.
No. Nethercott? No. Pappas?
Aye.
Aye. Perkins?
No.
No. Peterson?
No.
No. Rothfuss?
No.
No. Scott?
Aye.
Aye. Von Platern?
No.
No. Wasserberger?
Aye.
Aye. President Bebout?
No.
No. Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 11 aye, 19 no.
By your vote, Senate File 55 has failed to receive the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate. Senate File 55 has failed to pass the Senate. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we're at that order of business, consideration of bills on general file.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just before I make the motion, Mr. President, what we've got is we'll probably go through 90, and then we've got, we'll either, depending on, we may have to come out of committee of the whole and read in some committee reports so we can continue on. But anyway, we'll cross those bridges when we come to it. With that, Mr. President, I move that the Senate resolve itself in the committee of the whole.
You heard the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. It's a Riverton kind of day. Senator Nethercott, please come on up here. Woo-hoo.
Hey, Larry.
Here's some water for you.
Thank you.
You know, you can use your fingers if you like, or you can do it this way. Whatever you want to do. Your choice. The fingers work sometimes, but just however you want to do it. Anything else you need?
Lord knows.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Okay.
Use the mouse.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You want me in this picture?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, I don't know if she wants you in the picture.
I do. Oh. I do.
You can't figure it out.
I can't find my camera. There we go.
This is for my trip. I mean, I'll get it.
Well, you know, you've been there a while, John.
Go ahead, get one of her.
Thank you. Let's do that one more time. The Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 99. The reading clerk will read the Senate file.
Senate File 99, Community and Rural Health Clinic Grants, Sunset Date, an act relating to community health centers and rural health clinics, sponsored by Senator Baldwin. Was referred to committee number 10, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Baldwin, Boner, Bouchard, Peterson, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Scott. Senator Scott, your mic is on.
Okay. Madam Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole rise and report to do so with a recommendation that Senate File 99 do pass. There were no standing committee amendments, and I yield to Senator Baldwin for an explanation of the good little Senate file.
Senator Baldwin? Keeps going off.
There you go. Thank you, Madam Chairman. As the good chairman of the committee stated, this is a little file. It's a cute little file. Perhaps the quickest read of the day. If you want to take 30 seconds to read the bill, please feel free. This is Senate File 99. What this is a simple bill to extend the sunset of a program. Just let me explain the program to you real quick, and then I'll sit down and shut up, and we'll hear somebody else. In 2011, there was a bill sponsored, House Bill 49, sponsored by the Labor and Health Committee, was passed. It was funding to start up new community health centers. The bill did pass. Funding was provided. In 2013, after funding was available, $1 million appropriated by the legislature, four communities or four entities in Wyoming took advantage of that $1 million, and it was immediately committed and ultimately spent on community health centers in four parts of the state. Subsequently, in general, those committees have been, or those programs, those community health centers have been very successful and have provided a lot of good care for our communities in the state. I say it's quite diverse where they're at. They're pretty much in every corner of the state at the moment. In 2014, there was an additional need. Another $200,000 was committed from the legislature and was immediately contracted out to another community health center, which subsequently
has not gone forward. They've made the decision to go ahead and do a rural health care center rather than a community health. So that $200,000 will likely be coming back into this program and be, again, available if somebody wanted to use that. It should be noted, and we did receive the testimony in committee, there's a lot of people that would use this if the money was available. The purpose of this bill is not to appropriate any money, simply to extend the program so if and when money does become available again via federal programs or however that becomes available, that the program will be in place and be able to be used again for the benefit of our communities. Of note is that not only is federal funding able to be used or state funding in this program, but funding from a private source could also be put into it. It's actually has a mechanism where any kind of donation in general could be put into this program to further it. My intent with sponsoring this bill is simply to keep the program open rather than let it sunset. It doesn't cost any money to keep it open. There's no money in it right at the moment. We don't have to put any money out nor put any money in. I just want to keep the program available. As the federal government undergoes some changes, perhaps some more money will become available. This mechanism will be there to distribute out to our communities to form these community health centers to the benefit of our people. And with that, I would encourage your favorable vote and stand for any questions.
Thank you, Senator Baldwin. Any questions for Senator Baldwin? Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 99, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 99 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 105. The reading clerk will read Senate File 105.
Senate File 105, Uniform Power of Attorney Act, an act relating to powers of attorney, sponsored by Senator Scott.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure?
Wait a minute. We need the committee report.
My apologies. It was referred to committee number one, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Anselmi Dalton, Christensen, Kinski, and Nethercott. Excused, Senator Hicks. Senator Christensen, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Christensen?
Committee of the Whole rises to report. I ask that they do so with a favorable recommendation. On Senate File 105, to present the bill will be Senator Scott.
Senator Scott?
Madam Chairman, this bill was brought to me by a task force commission that the governor had on elderly and vulnerable adults. I'm told it was their first priority. What this bill does is give us the Uniform Power of Attorney Act, which is an act done by the Uniform Commission on State Laws, and frankly, fellow senators, their work in the past has been quite good, and this bill is no exception. It addresses some very real needs that we have in this area. There are a number of instances of abuse of powers of attorney, often unfortunately by family members of elderly adults that give powers of attorney so their business affairs can be handled as they gradually get incapacitated and no longer can take care of them. Right now, if that's going on, other relatives don't have standing to get an accounting of what's going on. It's difficult to get anything done about it. And there's just no standards in our current law for dealing with that kind of problem. We're also having problems getting powers of attorney accepted by out-of-state financial institutions that hold deposits, for example, that people may need to pay their medical or their nursing home or their assisted living bills, and that's a problem. having the Uniform Act, which all but one of our surrounding states now do, this will solve a good part of that problem. I will give you a very quick run through of the bill. And it is a Uniform Act. On page 3, line 8, it speaks to incapacity. That's an important definition. If somebody is incapacitated, it means they have difficulty handling their business affairs. They aren't necessarily incompetent. They can still make decisions in their living arrangements, things like that. They can't necessarily handle complex business matters. And you will, Madam Chairman, sometimes see these where, say, a service member is deployed to Iraq or Afghanistan and can't count on the kind of communications you need to manage a business affair. They may well give somebody a power of attorney to take care of things while they're gone. They're in no way incompetent. They're very competent. But they need one of these things to handle that situation. So that definition on page 8 is key. There is on page 12, there is starting there, there's a provision how you terminate one of these things. Page 17, there's a list of duties, and that's very important, telling these agents what they can and can't do. And that's particularly important because this will cover somebody pulls a form off the Internet and uses that for the power of attorney. We need to be able to give them some guidance on what they can and can't do. You can see it's quite complex, but there is really, fellow senators, a very simple summary of what all the legal verbiage there says. It says, thou shalt not steal. And that's the long and the short of that. There is some provisions starting page 26 on acceptance of the power by third parties. That's important with some of the problems we've had. On page 30, starting on page 32, there's a list of the powers. If you want to give those, you have to specifically say so in your power of attorney. These are the so-called hot powers, and that's important as giving guidance so that some of these forms pulled off the Internet can't do some substantial things that really you need the prior approval of the maker of the power of attorney in order to do. And then there's a longer list that follows that of the general powers, and it always starts with the exception unless the power of attorney provides otherwise. You can tailor these to meet the needs of particular circumstances. There's an optional form on page 72. It is optional, but it gives you a pretty good idea of what's actually in one of these things, what potentially is in one of these things. There's a bunch of transition provisions starting on page 88. And the transition is more complicated in this state because most states have an intermediate power of attorney, durable power of attorney bill that was done previously by the Uniform Commission. We never enacted that, so we're taking more of a leap. And our current law, there was the leading elder law attorney in the state, or one of the leading elder law attorneys in the state, did an article for the magazine the Bar Association publishes and described our current law as both vague and sparse. And having read it, that description is entirely accurate. That law is repealed, and then we have a delayed effective date, January 1, 2018, which is delayed, Madam Chairman, so that the bar has plenty of opportunity to get educated before this comes into effect. So that is a very quick run-through. Be happy to answer any questions, and Madam Chairman, you know as well as anybody what this means for the attorney in practice, but I think this will be a help for both our attorneys and for It's not entirely for the aging population, but that's largely who uses it. It will give them a good deal more protection as they need to make these arrangements to make sure that things work for them in their final years. So, Madam Chairman, that's a quick run through. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Senator Scott. Questions on the bill? Senator Von Flattern.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is for the sponsor or the explainer of this bill. Why in Chapter 5 is there durable power of attorney, which seems to be the power of attorney, and this was put in the Title 3, Chapter 9. And so what is, you know, for us civilians, what is the difference between power of attorney and what you've just created here?
I'm Chairman.
Senator Scott.
And I will attempt to answer that. This does cover the durable power of attorney there. And you will find the current law on this in WAS. Let me look here at the standards. On WAS 35101, 35102, that this replaces. And if you will look on page 7, line 13, you'll find that these power of attorneys are durable, and there's the discussion of that and when they're durable, when they're not. You can limit them. But that's covered by this. The health care powers are not. You'll sometimes see health care power of attorney referred to. We repealed that bill a number of years ago, and Committee 10 brought you a Health Care Decisions Act, which is now in the statute elsewhere, that we did, frankly, with some very good assistance from an attorney who was working for the largest of the senior organizations in the state at the time, and who subsequently replaced Senator Vasey and was a member here for a session. And that was very thoroughly done, and is elsewhere in the statute now. So, Madam Chairman, I hope that answers the question.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. A question of the sponsor, and it goes to the page 32 under the 39201 authority. And if you go on to page 33, the language there, and what I'm getting at to the sponsor is that, you know, a lot of times, for those of us that understand and have legal opinions and legal representation, and we're very cognizant of what a power of attorney does, this language probably works, but a lot of people really don't get into it until it's after the fact. And you really say that an agent is not an ancestor, spouse, or descendant of the principal shall not exercise authority. A lot of cases, that's hard to determine. I know this is a model act. Is there any language, any place else in there that covers those situations where you really clearly have not defined the power of attorney, yet you find yourself needing it, but you're not an ancestor, spouse, or descendant? And so if that's the case, what do you do?
Senator Scott?
Madam Chairman, referring to item B on page 33, notwithstanding grant authority to enact subsection A, and unless the power of attorney otherwise provides, and that's a key phrase, unless the power of attorney otherwise provides, an agent that is not ancestor, spouse, descendant shall not exercise the power of attorney to create in the agent and a person to whom the agent owes a legal duty of support an interest in the principal's property, whether by gift, right of survivorship, beneficiary disclaimer, or otherwise. Now, a couple of key points on that. Unless the power of attorney otherwise provides. You want there, if they're going to convert some of it to their own property, you want that explicitly authorized up front in the power of the attorney if they're not somebody who's a member, basically a member of your immediate family is what that's about. So where you are getting someone who say you had a bank, say you had your attorney, somebody like that exercising the power of attorney. You don't want them taking control of taking ownership of your property, taking an interest in it, unless you've told them they can. This is part of the thou shalt not steal provisions. But if you do have some reason where you say you're selling out to somebody over time and you want to just continue that, you put that up front in there so everybody knows that's legitimate up front, Madam Chairman, as to how you're doing it. So I hope that answers the question. Let's see if it does.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Thank you. Mike, I just have a question. If Senate File 105 comes to pass, does that require everybody who has a power of attorney to update them and redo them?
Senator Scott.
Madam Chairman, no, it does not. It might be a good idea to periodically go through these. We've heard some horror stories of ones that were done 20 years ago and nobody knows anything about them and they show up. It probably is a good idea to periodically do it. But this is designed to accommodate, and there's some transition provisions that say, is this the law that's applied? Is this not the law? Those are found on the very last pages. But the long and the short of that is, no, you don't have to. If you're confident in what you did, it will do what you want, there's no need to go back and withdraw. What this does do is tell the person who holds your power of attorney that there's some standards now and they've got to live up to them. It moves those from basically, Madam Chairman, a common law type of thing to a clear list here that is pretty good and pretty extensive. And, you know, I gave you the short summary that it says that thou shalt not steal, but it makes that much more enforceable. And it enables, say, a child or a spouse that has an interest to get an accounting, and that's important. But it doesn't require you to redo that power of attorney. If it's well done, it should remain perfectly good and perfectly valid. I would be nervous about ones if somebody just pulled one, Madam Chairman, off the Internet, pulled a form and did a power of attorney on that. My personal advice is that this deals with enough fundamental business, personal, financial interests that you would be very wise to consult with a Wyoming attorney and see what your power of attorney really does and see if it does what you want it to. But you don't have to.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Going back and addressing some questions, particularly that the good president from Riverton talked about, that as far as that ability about when an agent is a relative. So if you go to page 33, and we're talking about lines 12 through 20 in here, when you have that authority, the common law basically provided when you were an agent, you weren't able to act in your own to your own benefit. Keep in mind that as an agent, you come under the law of a fiduciary, and a fiduciary has an obligation not to benefit anybody who to discharge that duty and has a higher duty actually than just reasonable care to do what they're supposed to do under the agreement under their duty. So as an agent here, if you're an agent, unless your power of attorney specifically gives the authority to make a gift to yourself or to transfer property to yourself, or as it says in here, unless the power of attorney specifically gives you the right to transfer that property to someone who you might owe a legal obligation of support, you can't do that without violating the fiduciary provisions. And that's very common. The common law said you couldn't do that anyway because you're exercising that fiduciary duty to either benefit yourself or to discharge legal obligations which you otherwise would have to make. And so you have to be a little bit careful when you go about these things. For example, oftentimes in a power of attorney, you will authorize a gifting program. So you may be gifting up to, oftentimes you have a gifting program up to the amount of the annual exclusion, which is $14,000 a year, that you can give that out and it doesn't affect
estate or your estate or your gift tax exclusions under the law. And so they gift those gifting programs. It's very common in a power of attorney to grant that gift specifically so you can continue that gifting program. Now, if you're a son and you're doing that for a parent and you've always been in the gifting program, unless you have those provisions, generally the common law would have precluded you from making those gifting to you or to your grandchildren. You could do it to the others, to your brothers and sisters, your siblings, and the other grandchildren, but not to your own, and if they were minors. And so, and for obvious reasons, you want to be able to avoid significant self-dealing in these things and give these people a license to steal. So the point of that, of those sections, are that it just codifies now what's been in the common law that says unless you, if you have this relationship with the person that's giving you the power of attorney, you better have those provisions in it. If you're going to do those types of things, and if you think about it, it just really does. It will reduce, if you have those specific provisions, it'll reduce any arguments and misunderstandings with family members. And of course, there's nothing that usually, if you're going to do those types of things, you would always want to communicate that to anybody else as well to avoid those types of concerns. As far as one other thing, I make one other point, and that was with respect to what my good friend from Natrona County down here was talking about. What you have is what this will do. If you have an old power of attorney, this will fill in a lot of blanks for you. So if you've got an old power of attorney out there and it's very general, it's like it's a paragraph or two paragraphs long, this will flush that out dramatically so that it effectively updates your power of attorney just by the virtue of its passage.
President Bebout.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chairman. Another question, too, is when you talk about the authority again, me do following on behalf of the principal, and you look at the definition of a principal, and it means a person who grants authority to an agent in the power of attorney. My question is, when you get into estates and trusts, and you have a trustee, and, you know, it really doesn't say if that person is the principal. Does that mean that the trustee, if you have a power of attorney, would be included in this if you have a trust? And, you know, sometimes the trustees may have that power of attorney. Sometimes they don't. It all depends on your trust. And how would that affect, and what would this particular law do in that case?
Senator Scott.
Madam Chairman, I would first add to the previous discussion on the gifting. There is a provision back on page 70 and following of this that is designed to accommodate not as a hot power but a general power in the power of attorney, where you can continue an estate plan that has gifting up to the IRS exclusion amount. So that plays into this too and makes it easier to continue one of those. With regard to the question on estates and trusts and things like that, Madam Chairman, you're about to get out of my legal depth. But basically, these powers of attorney cease when the principal dies. So then you're under the probate code, and that's different. Your assets are then part of the estate, and you have to deal with them through that set of law, and the power of attorney goes away. Some of the interplay where there's trusts involved, basically, the power of attorney, as I understand, can come in and step in and take the principal's place in making decisions on those trusts, say if you have a revocable trust or something like that. One that's irrevocable depends what the power of somebody holding a power of attorney can't do anything that the principal couldn't do. So that will limit the flexibility on those because the principal's limited. And I don't know whether that fully answers the question, but basically, I think when you're talking estates, it's covered under a different part of the law, and this doesn't impinge on it.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Just to expand on that a little bit further, really what you have is there are two separate areas. If you have a trust, the trustee is going to be over and will have control and will be able to administer the trust in accordance with the terms of the trust. The durable power of attorney generally will fill in those gaps for things that aren't in the trust or that where the trustee wouldn't necessarily have authority to make any decisions. Although, as you can see, you can modify that. For example, it's not uncommon that a power of attorney would include the right to withdraw from a trust for on behalf of the principal. Or sometimes a power of attorney also might have the ability to designate, change beneficiary designations or other things like that. But those are specific powers you'd get in there. So ultimately, they kind of deal with different worlds. They deal with different worlds. The trustee will be obliged to follow what's in the trust and follow the terms there, and the power of attorney will then cover those things that really either the principal's relationship to the trust or delegating authority to the agent to do certain things with the trust. But you'd want to be careful because it'd be easy to confuse the two. But generally, they are kind of separate worlds, and they're a little bit of a there's a wall in between the two unless there's provisions that are going to provide some interaction or interference one with the other.
Further discussion on the bill? Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Christensen's motion that the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 105, say aye.
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 Those opposed, no. Senate File 105 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 90. Leave that on. You have heard...
Senate File 90, Allocation of Complementary Hunting Licenses, an act related to game and fish, sponsored by Senator Hicks, was referred to Committee Number 6, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Anselmi Dalton, Barnard, Boner, Emmerich, and Moniz. Senator Emmerich, Chairman.
Will the reading clerk read the amendment? What's your pleasure? Senator Emmerich.
Madam Chairman, Madam Chairman, in the Committee of the Whole, rise to report.
I get your mic, yeah.
I know. I'm just waiting to see.
Senator Emmerich.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report, it do so with a favorable consideration of Senate File Number 90. Allocation of Complementary Hunting Licenses. There is a standing committee amendment to the bill, and I would ask that that be read in.
Will the reading clerk read the amendment?
Senate File 90, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 2.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I would move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 90 and turn this over to the eloquent Senator Hicks.
Senator Hicks. Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman and members of the body, this could also be described as the Fairness in Hunting and the Anti-Monopoly Bill. So for an explanation of the bill, you do have the handout on your desk, and I'm going to refer to it and walk you through it. It's fairly complicated procedures, but it's a simple concept. So let me go into the nature of these particular complementary hunting licenses. There's seven Wyoming Game and Fish Commissioners on the commission at any one time. They are each allocated 8 licenses for their disposal. And they specifically can be used for elk, deer, antelope within the state of Wyoming. The other provision is they have to go to a charitable organization. Once they obtain these licenses, every year they are able to award those to any charity they want within the state of Wyoming, and sometimes to national organizations that may be outside the state. This bill doesn't change any of that, doesn't deal with that issue. What the bill is trying to do is get to a fairness issue. So this is the fairness component that we're trying to get to with this piece of legislation. So once a commissioner awards these licenses to an organization. There's really two forms that they dispose of them. And one of those forms is they award it to an organization, then the organization has the discretion. They can just do a simple bid process, either an eBay bid or an internet-type bidding thing or telephone bids, or they can go out to a general public raffle. This bill, again, does not get or touch those permits that go to a general public raffle. And the reason is because everybody has an opportunity to buy a raffle ticket. There's no barrier for anybody in the state or outside of the state of Wyoming to buy a raffle ticket to be able to go into a draw for these licenses. What this bill does is specifically narrow down those permits that go to organizations that then go straight to some type of bidding process. Typically, these licenses bring around $10,000. There's a range. They may go down as low as $7,000, and they may go as high as $12,000 or $13,000 for an individual permit. So that's the process. So let me walk you through the handout, and we'll explain. There's two issues with this current process, and this is what we're trying to do is just get to the process. So if you go to your first handout, what this does is show you where those commissioner's permits go within the state of Wyoming. So anything that's highlighted in yellow would be an instance where this bill now is going to pertain. But if you look at the first page of that, we want to go to the elk units in the state of Wyoming. And those are over on the left-hand column. It lists the unit and the type of permit. So you have to ask yourself, if you're going to spend $10,000 or $12,000 on an elk license in Wyoming, where are you going to go? You're going to go to the very best trophy unit in the state of Wyoming. And that's what you see reflected in here. So when you look down here and you look down those areas, so if we walk down that side and you get to where it says 051-1, and you'll see from 2001 till about 2008, there was anywhere from 1 to 20 permits going into that unit. And the reason is because that was the best elk hunting unit in the state of Wyoming. If you really wanted to go after a trophy bill, you got your commissioner's permit, you now get to designate where you go. And they go into these units. Well, if you look at that, say, so after 2008, all of a sudden, no more commissioner's permits went into that unit, and the reason is they got rid of that hunt. And they got rid of that hunt primarily associated with the reduction of elk population because of a large carnivore that was put into our national parks that now roams all over the state of Wyoming. You see the same thing if you go down that list to Area 55 Type 1, Area 56 Type 1. But you also notice if you get to 54, as those hunts were eliminated, the people that are buying the commissioner's permits jump into the next best unit within the state of Wyoming. So here's the issue that you face with a lot of resident sportsmen. And to illustrate this, what I'd like you to do is flip over onto the back of this. And this has to do with the deer area in the state of Wyoming. So if you go down that left-hand column, you get to 82 Type 1, and you see all of those units all the way up to 2012. The top line is the number of commissioner's permits that went in there. The bottom line is the number of general licenses allocated to the public that were issued in there. So you go down that list and you see first it was 5, then 4, then 5, 3 commissioners, then 2005 it jumped up to 14, 6, and you just see a continual rise in that. Well, what you also see in there is it's very important. As we get to 2008, as you saw an increase in the number of commissioner's permits going in here, you actually saw a reduction in the number of the permits available to the general public. And that gets to the issue of trying to establish some level of parity. For those people that don't have the opportunity to go out there and pay $9,000, $10,000, $11,000 for a unit, but we've actually, in a couple instances, had to reduce the number of general public permits because of the mass influx of commissioner's permits. There's a perception within the general public of the state of Wyoming that we're carving these out and these become the most affluent component of our society gets to hunt every year. Well, if you go back to the first page, what I did for you is show you what the percentage chance and draw from the general public. It's a 9% chance, a 5% chance, a 10%, a 4%. So these are once-in-a-lifetime opportunities for most sportsmen. So all this bill does is you can still buy your commissioner's permit. You still get a hunt in Wyoming. You're going to be able to pick one of the best units in Wyoming. But you're going to come, it's going to be a first-come, first-served basis. You'll go in there and you'll designate your unit and get a go to that unit. But what it does is it restricts it to 10% of whatever the normal general public quota is, only 10%. So if you look through that, you can say, okay, if there was 25 licenses or 50 licenses allocated, there's only a maximum of five commissioner's permits that are going to be hunted in here. That's one aspect. The other aspect that happens when I talk about the anti-monopoly component of this, if you look at these elk areas, the vast majority of them tend to be located in northwest Wyoming. That is moving around a little bit now to some of the areas in the state. But the monopolistic component of what goes on right now is this, because most of these are public lands hunts, the Forest Service allocates public use days, and as you, if you're in the outfitting and guide business, you only get allocated so many days, and you only get the units that you're allocated to by the Forest Service or the BLM. So what happens is when you get maybe one or two individuals that are permitted for use in this area, and they get 20 permits, they have a monopoly. They're going to get all 20 of those hunters, because if they're going to go on public lands, they have to book with those one or two, three individuals that permit in there. Basically, what the bill does is says, look, we're not going to allow you to pile into the very best of the best. You're going to have to spread yourself out. Now, there'll be more opportunity for some of the people in the outfitting and guide industry to pick up some of these, and some of these, they're still good units. Some of them are great units. They're just not those. This really only affects right now about five or six hunting units in the state of Wyoming. The one thing that I did want to point out to you on the back that dealt with the deer hunting on that component is they got rid of that season because of the public outcry, because there's now twice as many or 120% of the hunters in there just buy a permit every year. And basically the public says, you know, these guys are good hunters. They hire the best outfitters, and they kill the biggest animal every year. And there is a real perception that when this happens, you see an overall decline in the quality of those units. You may wait 15, 20, 25 years for you to draw this, and when you finally draw it, the quality has declined significantly to the point that it's just not that license that you would really hope for. So there is a standing committee amendment on this. We've read that in. I would move a standing committee. I think it's already been moved. So let me explain the amendment. And all the amendment does is says the commission shall promulgate rules and regulations to implement the requirements of this act. There'll be a few process things that have to occur associated with this. So what happens when you have 25 licenses and we issue 10%? You end up with 2.5%. This would give the department the ability to go in and promulgate rules on those issues. You could potentially have a case where two people come in at the exact same time and there's only one available permit. It'll give the department some flexibility to implement some rules to deal with just the actual process of administering these licenses. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'd ask for a favorable vote on the standing committee amendment number one.
Discussion on the amendment? Question been called? All those in favor of Senator Emmerich's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 90, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
Mr. Chairman, Madam Chairman, I would stand for a question.
Yes.
Point of order?
Thank you.
You
thank you, Senator Rothfuss. I was getting there. Senator Hicks is ready to go. The motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 90 has passed. We are back on the bill. Discussion on the bill. President Bebout.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Just a couple of questions. I'm assuming all of these areas we're talking about are draw areas. There are no general licenses. That's the first assumption. The second thing that I also assume is that most of these people that would buy these high dollar would probably use outfitters. And, you know, we have an issue with outfitters because of the inability to have any kind of guarantee on out-of-state hunters. Is there any effect to the outfitters? And the third question is the first come, first serve. So as I understand that, if the commissioners hand out some licenses, and usually they do elk, so is there going to be – how are we going to do that? Does that mean that if I'm a charitable organization that I want to run out there and do my auction as soon as I can because I want to be there on a first-come, first-served basis? Or if I wait later to try to generate more money for my charity, am I out of the running because I might not fall within the 10% because I waited and the first-come, first-served may be gone?
Senator Hicks.
Madam Chairman, so the answer to the first question, yes, these are all limited draw units. It has no impact on general licenses whatsoever. That's the first question. Outfitters, it will have, getting back to the monopolistic component is actually, it's correct, the vast majority of these higher outfitters, again, most of them, not all of them, tend to go to Northwest Wyoming and other places that they don't. Unit 7 over here in Converse, Laramie, and Albany County is mostly private lands that's leased by outfitters. In that particular case, it has no impact on those because there's so many licenses over there, it's never hit that cap of 10%. In other areas, what it'll effectively do is spread some of these permits around amongst different outfitters. There'll be a few guys, a few individuals that are impacted because they have that monopoly as they're the only ones permitted to guide in that unit. And probably third, and probably the best question was the third one, is how is this going to impact charitable organizations? So because of the first-come, first-served nature, in some of these units where you see there's only 10 licenses, there's only going to be one 10 commissioner's permit in there. In those particular cases, if your charitable organization is not oxygening off that permit till later in the year, you run the risk that permit's not going to be available. But what typically happens with these things is the charitable organizations will figure this out pretty quick. Other than those very, very limited instances where there's only one or two licenses, if you're really late to the game and you're auctioning these late in the year, you may be limited, but that's the reason that we put the component in there to allow the rule and regulation of the department is so that you'll be able to, because historically the way these work is you purchase the commissioner's permit and you just designate the unit. So one of the things that's going to happen is no different than we currently do for everybody else. You're going to have to designate a first, second, and third choice when you do this. The real question is it going to reduce the cost, the amount of money that the charitable organizations get from these licenses? So probably within the first year or two, what you're going to see is the early ones are going to generate a lot more money, and those organizations that wait till late into the spring or early summer may not bring quite as much money. If you look at the whole spectrum, it's probably not going to change. Somebody's going to pay more early and late, less later on. The average is going to be the same. But what we'd anticipate that it'll only take a year for most of the charitable organizations to figure out how to get theirs out there and get it marketed sooner so they can derive that premium. There's no doubt it'll move some of these bid permits up earlier into the process. Now, I hope that answers all the questions, Madam Chairman.
Further discussion on the bill? Senator Peterson.
Just a question, Madam Chairman. Thank you. How are those dispersed from the department or from the commissioner? Because a lot of times I think these charitable organizations don't have a choice. They receive it in May or April and find out that they're the latecomers to the game and they're commissioners technically bring in $4,000, $5,000 compared to the $10,000 or $12,000 in January, February, March. So that disbursement makes a lot of difference. It's not so much the charitable organization smartening up and saying, we're going to hit our bid sometime in the spring. They might get it late spring, and they're latecomers to the game. So I think this bill, although it's a good idea, will definitely have a reduction on those charitable organizations and the amount of money that these tags bring in. And my little program up there in our little community was a beneficiary from a commissioner's tag years ago, and it made all the difference. That year we were able to host a state baseball tournament for the first time ever. It brought in $10,000, and that's what it cost to run the tournament. And so that's my concern, is the value decreasing and also how those are dispersed from the department.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And along that same line, is there anything that would prevent in the rules and regulations for the commissioners that the commissioner's license is going to the draw and they know what priority they're in, or that those could be assigned so it doesn't affect what happens when the folks actually hold their auctions, what they would affect is if the commission, is there anything in the rules that would prevent the commission from assigning a priority or something like that to that, so that when it comes out, these folks know that a lot of folks that use these things. I mean, these are annual events for these charitable folks, and you, last thing you want is for everybody to all of a sudden scramble to have these charitable events all in the spring and first thing, because then they'll be competing with each other for these things, where if they're spaced out over time, you know, that'll just end up better than that. But my question is there anything that would prevent in your requirement on first come, first service basis, if ultimately if they draw out and there's a party established early on, is there anything to prevent that? Would that satisfy a first come, first serve potentially?
Senator Hicks?
Madam Chairman, to get to the value issue, so really that becomes up to the commissioner. They know they're going to get these permits. In fact, in some cases, those commissioners will promise organizations, I didn't give you one this year, but I'm going to give you one next year. So that really is up to the discretion of the commission as to when they want to hand these out. So that can be fleshed out. Obviously, the commissioners are going to get a little more pressure to allocate those early on, but they have that discretion. It's well within their ability to do so. Now, there is a provision that comes in. So what they do is every sitting commissioner gets 8 permits, 7 commissioners. But when we have years like this year where you have 3 commissioners going off and 3 coming on, it's the practice that the commissioners that are going to be seated after we go through confirmation in the Senate, that those new commissioners also get 8 permits apiece. So this year there'll be 3 of them. So there's going to be 24 more permits out there. In those particular cases, those are going to be a little bit late to the game. But keep in mind, there's already 56 of them out there every year. We get those years where every other year they appoint, or every fourth year that there's new commissioners on. Now that number goes up to 80 of these commissioners' permits. That in its very nature, while it may reduce those charities that get those, say, in May or April when the new commissions are seated, actually exacerbates the problem that we're trying to address here, because now you've got 24 more people that are piling into these really highly desirable units. So that's the nature of the system. And I don't know how to get around that issue of late coming to the game, but I will tell you, if you look through, and I didn't give you the entire list, there's over 30-some different elk units that commissioner's permits go into. So the idea is that there might be an individual unit and a couple of permits that probably would reduce the amount of money, especially for these late ones that are awarded with the new sitting commissioners. But there is a lot of good units within the state of Wyoming to hunt. There's 30-some elk units in the last few years that commissioners' permits have gone into, and a couple of deer areas. So that will be the nature of the system. Is this perfect? Does it answer all those questions? Absolutely not. It's just trying to bring a system that has a little more parity for the average person still, the commissioner's permits are a great thing. I think my colleague from the Bighorn Basin, they're a tremendous opportunity to use these for those local charitable organizations. But we should never lose sight that this is the best of the best for Wyoming, and we want to keep the commissioner's permits. You know, there was talk, do we just get rid of the commissioners? Do we reduce the number of permits? So this is really what we've been able to come up with, is what I would call the best compromise position that tries to address the concerns of the sportsmen, some of those outfitters, but also those charitable organizations. Madam Chairman, no silver bullet here. Just trying to move it so there's a little more parity amongst all the users out there.
Senator Anderson.
Madam Chairman, I think I'm beginning to understand the problem here and what we're trying to fix. So, but I have a question. If I'm looking at Elk Area 51-1 and the first year there, 2001, if we had this 10% rule in, there would only be 5 commissioner licenses. Would the other 15 go back to the regular quota, or would they just be gone?
Senator Hicks?
Madam Chairman, those would not go back into the regular quota. What would happen is those individuals that purchased that could then go to Area 52 or 56 or 54 or 57 or Area 7. They're still going to get to choose which area, elk area, they want to hunt in. They purchased that opportunity, so they'll just move to a different unit, but they still get to choose which unit they want as long as there's still available permits in there. I hope that addresses the senator's question.
Further discussion on the bill? Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Emmerich's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 90, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no?
No.
Senate File 90 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Majority floor, Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Excuse me, I move that the Committee of the Whole beg leave to rise and sit again momentarily.
Heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you. Any committee reports?
January 23, 2017, Mr. Presidential Committee Number 2, to whom was referred Senate File 24, Film Industry Financial Incentive Program, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Dockstader, Driscoll, Hastert, and Landon. Senator Burns, Chairman. January 23, Mr. Presidential Committee Number 2, to whom was referred Senate File 47, State Institution Revenue Accounts, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Dockstader, Driscoll, Hastert, and Landon. Senator Burns, Chairman. January 23, 2017, Mr. Presidential Committee Number 2, to whom was referred Senate File 48, Farm Loan Program Amendments, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Dockstader, Driscoll, Hastert, and Landon. Senator Burns, Chairman. January 23, 2017, Mr. Presidential Committee Number 2, to whom was referred Senate File 50, Civics Education Programs, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Dockstader, Driscoll, Hastert, and Landon. Senator Burns, Chairman. January 23, 2017, Mr. Presidential Committee Number 2, to whom was referred Senate File 51, Approval of Water Funds Transfer, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Dockstader, Driscoll, Hastert, and Landon. Senator Burns, Chairman. January 23, 2017, Mr. Presidential Committee Number 2, to whom was referred Senate File 52, Fund Balance Definition, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Dockstader, Driscoll, Hastert, and Landon. Senator Burns, Chairman. January 23, 2017, Mr. President, your committee number 2, to whom was referred Senate File 56, Omnibus Water Bill Planning, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Dockstader, Driscoll, Hastert, and Landon. Senator Burns, Chairman. January 23, 2017, Mr. President, your committee number 2, to whom was referred Senate File 72, 2017 Large Project Funding, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Dockstader, Driscoll, Hastert, and Landon. Senator Burns, Chairman. January 23, 2017, Mr. President, your committee number 10, to whom was referred Senate File 106, Obsolete Reporting Requirements, Repeal and Modification, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Baldwin, Boner, Bouchard, Peterson, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman. January 23, 2017, Mr. President, your committee number 1, to whom was referred Senate File 107, Probate Code Amendments, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Anselmi Dalton, Christensen, Hicks, Kinski, and Nethercott. Senator Christensen, Chairman. January 23, 2017, Mr. President, your committee number 10, to whom is referred Senate File 67, CHIP Program Amendments, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with the recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Baldwin, Boner, Bouchard, Peterson, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman.
Not sure what your question was.
Minority Floor Leader.
Yes, Mr. President, I move that the Senate resolve itself back in the committee of the whole for one more bill before we recess.
Heard the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carried. Senator Nethercott.
The Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 47. The reading clerk will read Senate File 47.
Senate File 47, State Institution Revenue Accounts, an act relating to state institutions, sponsored by the Appropriations Committee, was referred to Committee Number 2, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Dockstader, Driscoll, Hastert, and Landon. Senator Burns, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Burns.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 47, State Institution Revenue Accounts. There are no standing committee amendments on this bill, and for further explanation, I ask that you call on the good senator from Devil's Tower.
Senator Driscoll.
Madam Chairman, thank you. Senate File 47, this bill merely redirects funds back into it. I'll read the part of it and explain it. That goes to page 3 is where the meat of the bill is on the change to statute. It says language may provide for deposit of monies, income received, collected by institution of the state. Other accounts provide those funds expended for the mission of the public institution provided, merely returns those funds back to where they should do, cleans the statute up in that way, makes it clear to where they go, and also gives further down on line 18 to 23, provides for the deposit of the monies to that organization into a separate fund and make sure they expend where they're at. So goes to the back page of their page 4 of the bill. Under line 6, strikes out the Wyoming Retirement Center on both ends of it, that the revenues from it that go back over to the state treasurer and deposited in the general fund, so it pulls the retirement center out of it. So it basically puts all the funds back from the agencies that they collect that should go there without going to that further step. With that, I'd stand for questions.
Discussion on the bill. Senator Burns.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, this is one of a number of bills that we'll be bringing that have, when we had the traditional large budget bill, these were footnotes, and they were footnotes that have been being put on year in and year out. But since we have broken the budget bill basically up into four different bills in the past, starting this past biennium, we are now putting these footnotes, what were footnotes, into statute so we don't have to continuously do that.
Senator Scott.
Madam Chairman, question. We've got, I've heard considerable discussion of a similar problem with regard to family practice residencies, where they've got clinical revenue coming in quite a bit of volume. And I'm wondering if at some point, either in a footnote to the budget bill or in one of these bills, would be appropriate to deal with that problem.
Senator Driscoll.
Mr. Chairman, or Madam Chairman, yes, I would think that would be appropriate pending approval of the chairman, but it sounds to me like that fits exactly into what we're doing, and we already have the Pioneer Home. So.
Further discussion? All those in favor of Senator Burns' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 47, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? No. Senate File 47 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Majority Floor Leader Perkins.
Thank you,
Madam Chairman. Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that the Committee of the Whole beg leave to rise and sit again.
All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion passes.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, what time did you want us to come back? Have you thought about that?
Yes, Chairman, I think when I make the motion, we'll come back at 2, unless you want me to make the motion now.
No. That's why I'm asking for the motion, Mr.
Okay. Thanks for communicating with Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that we stand in recess until 2 p.m.
Okay, announcements. Senator Burns.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your committee number 2, appropriations, Senate appropriations, will meet in Jonah Room L55 tomorrow at lunch break at 1 p.m. To discuss a bill that's not mentioned here. The bill is, if I recall, it is the ETS bill. I don't know if you need a better explanation than that. I'm sorry that it wasn't put in the bulletin.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your committee number 7, Corporations, will meet tomorrow morning. Please note the time, 7 a.m. in Juno Room S18. We'll continue our discussion of Senate File 15, Special District Budget Requirements. Then we'll move on to Senate File 16, Special District Elections, Senate File 18, Special District Public Records, BOCES. And if time permits, Mr. President, we'll take up Senate File 12, Recall of Elected Officials, Commission-Run Municipalities. All of those are committee bills, Mr. President.
Senator Emmert.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number six, travel, recreation, and wildlife and fuzzy creatures and things, will meet tomorrow morning at 8 a.m., Jonah Room S27, to consider the following bills. Senate File 104, regulation of bingo and pull tab game events. Senate File 120, mentor antelope hunting voucher. Thank you.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. President, I draw the body's attention to that announcement that was just put in your boxes of the Convention of States. It's a special speakers are being brought in. If you have questions or concerns about this, no matter what bill might be coming before us calling for a Convention of States, these are special speakers that have been brought in to answer all those questions. That reception is tonight at Little America.
Further announcements? The Senate is in recess until 2 p.m. today.